Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Laura Alamiri. Laura, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, really excited to hear about all of your experience. I know you have a long history in real estate and have done many different things. So you're currently working on wholesaling, but you also have a buy and hold property and you've done fix and flipping. You work with private investors. So take us back, please, and tell us a bit about just that origin story, how and why you got into real estate in the first place and what you were doing before that.
Great. Well, I've been in real estate since 1987, so it's been for a while. Actually, originally, I'm from Italy, so if you wonder about my accent, and I came to the United States in 1985. And in 1987, actually, I was in Hawaii. And while I was going through college, I was looking for some type of side business or side job to pay for college. And I ran across real estate. You know, I saw what real estate was doing in Hawaii back in the 80s. It was really booming. It was great. And I said, well, let me get my real estate license. And I got my license and I went to work for a company that were mainly developers and investors. And so beside being a real estate agent and working as a regular agent, I also saw the other side of real estate and got interested into doing real estate investing. So I was actually strictly an agent. I did a couple of fix and flips, as I would call it myself in Hawaii, but mainly they were my private residence. And then when I got to the mainland back in 91, I went into rentals. Actually, I started buying rental properties. Now, I was fresh out of college and didn't really have a job, income, or credit.
Real quick, Laura, so were you considering other career paths or why were you focusing on real estate specifically?
Good question. Actually, my degree was in accounting. So I was working corporate. Well, I was an agent in Hawaii. When I came to the mainland, I actually went to work in a corporate job and I was doing real estate on the side. I like the income. I like the fact, especially with passive income, that I was looking for something that could supplement and eventually substitute my corporate job, which I did. And so that's why I look at real estate originally for a way to pay for college and then as a source of passive income.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So then you went back to the mainland and you were saying you were a student, you didn't have any income, and et cetera.
Right. So in 91, I came to the mainland and coming from Hawaii, I was a real estate agent, used to those commissions, you know, in Hawaii, they're much higher. I ended up in the Midwest. And so I looked at real estate more as a way for me to buy a rental property and create a passive income. So I focused on that in 91 and 92. But because I didn't have a steady job at that point, I was just starting out in corporate and I lived in a rural area. So I was looking 2 hours away and I started buying a rental portfolio using a lot of different type of creative financing strategies, anywhere from owner financing, lease options, subject to contract for deeds. And within about 18 months, I had over 40 doors and 16 properties in 18 months, mainly multifamilies. And I did that without any bank financing.
Okay, great. And so you decided, let me see if I understand, you decided to focus specifically on developing that passive cash flow rather than being a realtor, because I think you mentioned the commissions are lower in the Midwest, right? And so you decided to shift strategies?
Correct.
Okay, yes. Great. And so then how, you know, I mean, I'm sure so many listeners are curious, like, can you just give us some more color on like, yeah, how you went about doing that?
Well, I actually came across a late night infomercial back in 91. It was, some of you might know, Carlton Sheets. And he had a program about basically doing lease options, sandwich lease. And I bought that program, and there was something very crucial in there. It was showing him having these conversations with people that wanted to rent a property. And he was asking, basically, I see you wanted to rent your house. Would you consider selling at some point in the future? And by having this conversation, he did lease options to buy. And then we know the story beyond that. So I started having the same type of conversation. I would pick up the Sunday paper. We're talking 91. So
Laura, just really quick, just for our listeners who aren't familiar with lease options, can you just explain those?
Yeah, sure. Your lease option to buy means you're going to rent a property for a certain time, 1 to 2 years, with the option to buy at the end of the lease. Okay. And it's a very good way. And then sandwich lease means that you're going to rent the property, but then you're going to sublease it to somebody else. Okay.
Okay. And then what about, like, how do you, I mean, I'm just curious, and I'm sure those, how do you actually have those conversations with sellers? What's in it for them to do a lease option?
Well, I'm going to rent it from them. So, you know, I will pay the rent. And then at the end, when I buy the property, they would make a certain amount of profit.
Okay. So do you agree on the price at that point?
Of course. Yes.
Okay.
The lease option, you set the price, and there are different things in the contract. Obviously, you want to protect yourself in the case this doesn't go through, or if the market changes, you know, if the property is worth 100,000 today, but in 2 years it's worth 90,000, you know, you want to have clauses to protect it for fluctuations as well.
Okay, for sure. So then you just basically get them to decide that they want to sell in 2 years. Like, I mean, I'm just curious, like, what is it that makes them decide, okay, yeah, I would be willing to let go of this property in 2 years? Can they say, can they actually decide, well, I actually don't want to sell it at this price in 2 years?
No, not the way we structure the contract. They, you know, like I said, my question to them, when I call them up front and say, do you want to rent your property? And they say, yes, obviously they're advertising for rent. And then I'm asking, are you considering selling it, the property, in the future? And if they say, oh, yeah, you know, I might consider in a year or two, or yeah, I was thinking about it. Or, you know, a lot of times the property needs work, they'll be willing to rent it to you. You get the work done, and then, you know, they can. So there is different type of situation. But first of all, my conversation with them is, are you even willing to do that? You know?
Yeah.
Especially when you target, one of my thing is I always targeted like elderly landlords that have owned the properties for a while. So they're looking maybe for an exit strategy in the near future, in a couple of years. So that's what I was targeting.
Okay, for sure. And just another question about that. So like, why would that homeowner decide, like, why wouldn't you just buy it from them then at that moment?
Because I wanted to create residual income. You know, that's the thing. And for me, obviously, they're looking to rent right now. Now, there are some situations they will say, even now, I come across a lot of situations where they say, well, I'm just, you know, if I get the right price or right offer, I would sell it now. The other thing is, a lot of time they wanted maybe what was market or more, right? So like right now, for example, everybody wants full price for their property or more. And so you're selling them at a future value. So one of the things I tell them right now, and this gets a little bit complicated, but one of the thing is I give them two offers. If they want $100,000 for the property, and that's what is market value, so there is nothing for me to make a profit on, I say to them, okay, I have two options for you. I can buy from you today at $90,000, and then I'm going to wholesale the property, or I can buy to you a year from now at $110,000. You know, speculating that the market is going to be appreciating over this next year, which I honestly believe it will. So what the fact is, I'm either giving them discount and buy it today, or I give them what they want and a little more by a year or two down the road. So you give them a little bit of an option there and control.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very cool. Thank you. So this is how you originally started buying your, or building your rental portfolio.
Yes. And so I started with that. Eventually, within a couple of years after that, I went into doing some fix and flips. I did use hard money for the first fix and flip, which I did not like to do, because back then, especially in the 90s, interest rates were like 16%, a lot of junk fees. At the end of the day, when I sold the property, they made more profit than I did. And so I did it once, and I said, I'm never going to do this again. And then I went into wholesaling, which back then was called flipping the contract, which is actually the correct terminology for it, because you're really not wholesaling a property. You're actually selling a contract, right? You don't own the property. So I started wholesaling, as they call it, back in 93, 94. And so I did all three strategies. Now in 95...
You were still in the Midwest at this time, is that right?
Still in the Midwest. I was there for over 20 years. I'm down in South Florida right now. I live near Miami. But back then, yes, that's where I started. And so then back in 95, I decided to quit my corporate job. I had enough things going on with real estate at this point, between the rentals, the fix and flip, the wholesaling, that it didn't make sense to me to sit behind the desk anymore. And so I quit my job and got into real estate full time in 95.
Okay, very cool. So, and you were saying that you used a combination of financing strategies, right? Like, so you used, can you talk some more about those? I know it's like really just a hot topic is creative financing.
Right. Well, like I started with the lease options and then I went into what they call subject to. So basically the mortgage will stay into the person's name. They just transfer the title to me. The reason I started doing that after the lease options. So what I do even to this day, the lease options, I have it for 6 months to a year. Then I change where the title gets transferred to me so I can refinance the property and cash them out. So I work those in conjunction. And then I start doing contract for deed, which basically is a glorified rental agreement, right? You basically make a promise that at the end of the certain time, you will buy the property for them. But back then, the good thing they cannot do anymore, unfortunately, back then with a contract for deed, you could also do a refinance. So they will refinance you on a contract for deed. Doesn't work anymore, so unfortunately. So, you know, I use a combination of those because once I created enough rental income coming in from these properties, then I could take the rental income to get the mortgages, right? Mm-hmm. So I would qualify based on the income on the properties. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you can do that obviously with private money, private investors, you know, syndication. So it's a different way of doing it, but that's how I did it back then.
Okay. Yes. Very amazing. I mean, I love just so much about that story about you just kind of making it happen. Did you ever consider, were you also acting as a realtor at all? Like, was that part of your career path as well?
I was licensed for over 20 years, but I did not. After I came from Hawaii, I moved to the mainland. I never sold for anybody else. I wasn't acting as an agent for anybody, just on my own deals.
Okay. So I know that you also have a buy and hold portfolio. At what point did you start building that and how did you start building it?
I started in 91, you know, when I started with the properties. I did sell most of them though, because at some point I was going to move to the East Coast and my personal situation. So I started selling. So by 95, I had very little left. And then back in 97, I started buying again when I decided I was going to stay in the Midwest. So yeah, there have been times where I sold, I bought, I sold again. Then after 2007 happened, we let a lot of these properties go again. We sold a lot of them by 2015. And then we start buying again. So it's been a cycle. It's not like I've always bought and kept the portfolio.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter. Okay, so for you, if you were to think about the cycles of your phases, I mean, I know you touched on the first phase, like you sold because you were thinking about moving. Were you timing the market or how did you decide when to kind of have these cycles end and begin?
In the beginning, it was more about personal situations, moving, divorces, that type of thing, right?
Yeah.
And then the 2007 obviously happened because of the housing crisis. By then, what happened is I went into syndication. So we had a lot of money tied up in different projects. So we're doing a lot of rehabs, buying a lot of property, fix them up. When 2007 hit, I went to my investor and I said to them, what do you want to do with these properties? You're not going to get your money out because of the situation in the market. So we changed a lot of these into rentals. So a lot of them decided, let's keep them, let's move them into a rental portfolio. So that's what we did. And we kept them until about 2015 and then start selling out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very smart. And was that a difficult conversation to have with your investors back in 2007? I mean, I love being able to talk to people who've been through that period and just hear about what it was like from all angles.
It wasn't. And the reason being is that I had full transparency with my investor. I started going into syndication and raising private money in 2001. And from the get-go, I was very transparent. They were very hands-off. I mean, they didn't have to see the properties, but every month we had a meeting and I showed everything, all the projects. You know, we were doing over 20 rehabs at the time. And so I was showing the projects where we are within the project, you know, what was going on, very transparent, the good and the bad about each deal. And so by the time 2007 rolled around, I had built a lot of trust with them. So when I had a conversation, I remember sitting down and said, you know, I have two options for you. And some of them took that where it was cash out, get what you can and move on. The other ones, especially the older ones I had, the elderly, they wanted to just, you know, cash out, put the money back in their trust or whatever. And the other one decided they were going to hold off as a rental. So they both made choices. There was no threats or animosity or nothing. It was just,
oh, sure.
Yeah. We had built such a good rapport over the years. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that is just like so key, is building kind of a partnership relationship with your investors, because mm-hmm. together, you know, both bring something to the table and helping each other, you know, make money and succeed and build a portfolio, et cetera. So for those older investors that wanted to cash out, how did you do that? Like, where did you find the cash to cash them out?
We sold the properties.
Oh, okay. So just at a loss.
Yeah.
You sold them at a loss.
Yeah. They sold the property and took whatever they could on it. Yeah.
Okay. And like, what size properties were these? Were these single family homes? Were they multis?
No, they were mainly small multifamilies. I mean, small, anywhere from 2 to 4 units, still considered residential, because my market, the buyers for these properties were mainly landlords, smaller landlords. So we didn't want to get into any type of commercial. We got into a couple of commercial, like 8 and 12 units, but most of them were smaller, probably 2 and 4, very little to no single family.
Okay. And these were in the Midwest too?
Yes.
I see. Okay. What state were you in the Midwest?
They were in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure just so much changed in that market in the time that you were there, right? Like, it's such a...
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
As we've seen the rise, we've seen the fall. Right now, it's kind of there. You know, it's doing still okay. We still do a lot of work and investments over there, even if I live in Florida, which is where we moved more into the last few years, is more into the virtual space of real estate. I started doing things virtually back in the 90s because at some point I lived in New York and I was still doing business in the Midwest, but I was doing everything virtually. So I started back in 96, 97. Nowadays, is all our business is virtual, meaning we live here, but we don't do business here. We do it over parts around the country.
Okay. So like, whereas when you were in the Midwest, you were not virtual because you were buying and selling in that same area. Whereas now you're doing long distance purchasing.
Correct.
Okay. So I know, Laura, that one of the things that you're focused on right now is wholesaling, but you've also done, you know, acquisitions of small multifamily syndications. How would you compare the two business lines? I mean, I'm sure it's somewhat contextual in terms of the times that we're in. And I'd love if you could just speak on, you know, the difference between those two and why you're choosing one over the other right now, and some of the benefits and drawbacks of each.
Right. Well, I guess at this point in my life, I'm looking more to be hands-off. You know, with the virtual side of the business, I'm totally hands-off. I mean, honestly, I work with real estate probably 3 to 4 hours a week. It's mainly about supervising my team, telling other people what to do. And really, I'm not putting a lot of my personal time into it. With wholesaling, you put properties on the contract and you sell the contract, so you don't have any lingering ties, no responsibility or nothing as far as, you know, after you buy the property. So that's why I like the side of the business, because you can do it from anywhere in the world. You can definitely travel and, you know, be more hands-off. With my rentals right now, I'm more in partnerships where I have the money invested with other people and they deal with the day-to-day of the rental management. I don't personally want to do that anymore. So that's what I do.
Tell me why.
It takes a personality to do that. I've been a landlord. I actually own the property management company. I just don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with the day-to-day, you know, personality and dealing with people. And I do fix and flips, though. We still do some cherry pick some property that instead of wholesaling, we rehab and sell them retail.
Okay. So for you, you're able to, the reason you like wholesaling right now is because you're able to do it in a hands-off way.
Yes.
Whereas when you were working on the multifamily side, it required more attention from your part. Is that right?
Yeah. And plus when you're dealing with other people's money, right, it's a responsibility. Like I said, I was very fortunate at the beginning of 2000, I established a good relationship with my private lenders. But because I was present, I was hands-on with them. That's why we were able to, you know, I know a lot of other investors, they got in trouble, had to file bankruptcy, had things happening after 2007, where I didn't have to go down that route because of my rapport. But, you know, it takes work to build that type of rapport.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So it's, so for you, being able to do the wholesale business is also hands-off because the investor relations piece is not part of it.
Correct.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean, it's certainly something that, you know, as my private equity firm grows, it definitely, you know, it is a lot of work to keep in touch with everybody. And, you know, some of it you can automate, and but it still like requires that personal touch when people are putting their money with you, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that's part of why I do it, right? To improve the lives of the people that I work with. And yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And like I said, a different time, you know, I am almost 60 years old. I'm 58 this year. And at this point of my life, you know, I'm looking to not be as much hands-on. My daughter is taking over a lot of the business, but she does not want to go into that. She wants to do, right now she's wholesaling. She's going to start buying some rentals here in the next year. She's waiting for the market to cool off a little bit. But the thing is, she doesn't want to, you know, she's up and coming. She is in her 30s. So it's a different time of the life. You make different choices. And that's the great thing about real estate, right? You can adapt it to where you are and what you want to do.
Yeah, for sure. And let me just ask you something else, Laura, just to kind of about that sort of trajectory that you've chosen. Have you put, it sounds like, I know you have done passive investments, but in terms of, you know, with wholesaling, it seems like that's still, I mean, I don't know how much time it requires exactly for you, but have you ever thought about just building a purely passive portfolio?
Just passive income?
Yeah. Like where you, I think you did say that you're doing this, you're investing. Like
yeah, I'm doing it. I'm just not managing the property, but no, I still have passive income. It's just that right now, instead of me being really more in touch with the management side of things, I don't want to do that. So my business partners do that. I just have my money tied up into the properties.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
And they pay me a return on my money, which is more than I would get anywhere else because I get percentage of the income. So yeah.
Yeah. And I'd love to just dive a little bit into that aspect of the business because, you know, that's kind of what the listeners of the show are interested in doing is being a passive investor. So, you know, how did you decide you wanted to put your money with like your business partners and then be in charge of the management rather than you? Can you just offer some advice as to how that worked for you?
Sure. Well, part of it happened really by chance, right? When 2007 happened and I had all these private investors, I also had my own money tied into investments. So instead of selling this property, I decided I was going to hold on to them. So when we fast forward, now I dissolved that type of organization entity that we had before then for the syndication. So when then we established a new entity for handling these rentals, we also had a management in place to take care of these properties because it was my money, other people's money into it and so forth. So then when we start selling it, you know, it kind of naturally went into its own pretty much entity in doing so. So we have appointed somebody to take care of the property. We call it, you know, we just hire somebody to just manage for us, don't manage for anybody else. And some of the investors have backed away since then, meaning they, you know, some of them passed away because obviously they were older and some of them cashed out. And so right now we have 6 investors that were still holding these properties that came from 2007. And some of them are paid for, they are paid in full. So we borrowed on some of them for other properties, but most of it right now is just really purely income. So it was a transition that we did. It's not like I thought, oh, let me do that. It was kind of happened because of what we were into. But right now it runs well. But yes, none of us manage the property. So we have somebody that manages for us.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Laura, for coming on and sharing so much about your just very long history in real estate and, you know, how to get deals done. We covered a lot of ground and I know there's still so much wisdom that you have to offer. So thank you so much. Please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share.
Sure. My website is lauraalameri.com, which is really my name, literally lauraalameri.com. So you'll learn more about me and my history. I also have another website with my daughter. We actually are moving more in the space of empowering women to invest in real estate. So we have a website, it's called realestateinvestingwomen.com. And one goes a lot more into empowering women. We also very much of a believer working on really your mindset, breaking through. You know, women tend to have a little more fears of really stepping out there. And I want to really teach women that to trust their gut feeling, to trust themselves that they can do this business. And like I said, I started back in the 80s. One of the things I want to say, I was very fortunate in Hawaii. I worked for a real estate agency that were 75 real estate agents and 74 were women, because the owner of the company, Vi Dolman, believed that women were better at this. And so I was very inspired by that women, and I want to bring it forward, and I want to leave a legacy of women taking over real estate by storm. So I'm very much about that.
So much, so great. Well, thank you, Laura, for sharing that. And I hope you guys check out everything that she's working on.
Great.
Really great talking with you today, Laura. We'll see you next time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.